You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Wake Up Tucson, BBG, Sean McCluskey, Captain Chaos, sitting in for Christy Simone. I mentioned before that it's called, I have to do this slow because I really messed it up last time. It's called Talk Radio for a Reason. Part of it, the importance here is interacting. Feel free to give us a call, 790-2040. Very excited about our next guest coming up, even though I was given a hard time when they came in. It's a nonprofit called Lead Guitar. It's based out of Tucson. I'm the foundation, the impetus. It all started right here in the Old Pueblo, and now you're spreading your wings elsewhere. And folks really need to hear about this. You heard earlier in the show, Sean, myself, Matt, we all at some point, I wouldn't have called myself a musician, but I played an instrument. And it took me a lot of places in life that I would not have ever been able to go to. And I know when I talk to young people who are thinking about this, one of the hooks I use is, how many languages do you speak? And, you know, they may speak Spanish and they may speak English. I said, no, you actually speak a third language. Because anybody who's been to church and can actually read out of the hymnal, they don't get the fact that if you can read music, you, in effect, are special. You know another language. And that's makes a big difference. So joining us in the studio, we have Freddie Vasquez, who's the regional director for Lead Guitar, and Brad Richter, who's the executive director and co-founder. Brad, how did this idea first come about?
Well, I like a lot of ideas like this, kind of by accident. I used to play a lot of concerts and travel to do it, and I was up in Page, Arizona, playing a concert, and the group that had hired me said, hey, we've got a lot of talented guitar players at the high school, come check them out and give a few lessons, and I did. And they were unusually talented, but what happens a lot with guitar classes in schools at that time were they would be a bunch of kids in a room with guitars, and the teacher was, it was the band teacher or a choir teacher assigned to teach that guitar class, and they didn't play guitar.
Somebody who didn't really play guitar.
Right, exactly. So I wrote a curriculum for that choir teacher to teach the kids in the class how to read music and some technique, and then I just kept coming back and checking on them, and turned into a retreat and a regular thing, and had a couple of schools, and then my friend Mark Sandroff, who's our other co-founder, at one point saw what I was doing and said, hey, why not turn this into a nonprofit and let's spread it to a lot more schools? So over the years, we formalized it into a much more formal program with concerts and daily lessons. And so now we're in 105 schools across all four U.S. time zones, and most of our classes are every day all school year long, and they're 4-credit classes.
Tell me something, and it's been ages since I started on the flutophone back. I mean, that had to have been 70. Well, I'm not going to say that because I don't want to date myself. But, I mean, back then, we've seen a lack of funding in our many of our schools now. Has music fallen off the radar? Is it just not part of the budgets anymore? If I want my young person to pick up an instrument, are we on our own, or can we even get it? Could I get it through a normal public school now?
It's really inconsistent, especially in Arizona, and that's a big part of the problem that we want to help solve. So in most schools, we still have a music teacher, but they're stretched thin, and they might have one specialty. So part of what we do is, I mean, guitar is a pretty universal instrument. It connects to every genre of music. So we tend to draw a lot of kids into music learning that weren't joining band or orchestra or choir. And then we have some schools where there's no music teacher at all, and where part of our program is to train the teacher we're co-teaching with to play and teach guitar themselves so they can go on without us. And sometimes we're training a math or a science or a history teacher to play and teach guitar. Freddie's done a lot of that.
So, Freddie, a question. We're just, before you all came on, we're talking about the decisions that go into where to build housing and all the decision factors and pressure points. As you're looking to expand the reach of these programs, is there a particular demographic or income level, or I mean, what do you use to, I mean, you're all across the country now, what do you, how do you decide, okay, this is where we want to plant the next seed?
Yeah, a lot of our schools, to get our free program, they had to have 80% of the population has to be in free and reduced lunch, the students. And then after that, they kind of, you know, like the lower the percentage, and, you know, we do make some adjustments with that. And so we here in Tucson, we are actually a lot of them are in, the southern part of, you know, TUSD, and of course we have some in Anfa High School. When we're, you know, reaching out for schools, we see about, you know, their percentage, and then also mainly actually just seeing if there's any, you know, music there, or if there's like a band teacher, choir teacher that has like a set of guitars and they just need something, and we're able to kind of like see what we could do to kind of help them out with that.
So would the ideal situation be, coming from an uneducated standpoint, if there was no music program, because then you're creating a bigger impact, or you need something to build upon, or else it's an endeavor that's going to fail?
Yeah, we work with both situations. We have a couple examples of schools, like if we weren't there, the students wouldn't be able to get any music until possibly eighth grade or even high school. And that's where we do actually push on just a little bit more, just because they're like, let's see if we could just get them some music until, you know, so forth. And we trained a lot of elementary teachers, actually, and, just to kind of continue doing the guitar lessons. And it's actually really great of after like a year or so, you know, those teachers feel very confident playing the guitar. And, you know, then, you know, themselves, they're surprised that like, wow, I could play guitar. And, you know, our curriculum is very easy to understand. It's just like the very first year is just like, as long as you're just following, kind of continuing the lesson, we have lots of online, tutorials for them. So after the first year, they feel very confident of continuing, and it's really great to kind of see that, hey, yeah, if we weren't there, no music was, you know, would be happening until their teens.
You guys have an extensive, list of staff members. Mm-hmm. So how many states are you in, and how many schools do you have?
We're in 7 states, 105 schools, but, We started in Tucson, which is kind of the heart of our program. So all of our full-time employees are here. And then we do a lot of testing and experiment. Like one of the things we're proudest of is we developed a guitar program called Adaptive Guitar for kids who have learning differences. Huh. And that's only in Tucson.
Hey, explain to me more about what that means.
The Adaptive program was first developed closer to 2019, and that's when we first started kind of using it. And so the way we went about that is still using the same our standard method, you know, using the same song, same, you know, language, but instead of having the students using standard technique of individual fingers, we actually worked around with using this device called the Chord Buddy, mm-hmm. where you attach on the guitar and it has 4 different colors. The beauty part about that is that it allows the student to just use one finger to press down a button, and then actually plays his full chord. And with anyone who has ever tried the guitar, you know, sometimes the first lesson that they teach themselves is playing like a C major chord, and then they doesn't sound great, and then they give up, and I don't want to play guitar anymore. Yeah. But with this, they play it, and it sounds great. And, you know, they're still learning how to read music, because now it goes into rhythm notation, and they're following, you know, it's the same song, same structure, and just it kind of includes everyone.
I tell you what, I've had my personal experience where, particularly when you're working with a young person, and there's that moment when you see the light come up in their eyes, mm-hmm. and there is no greater reward than that. When we come back, I'd like to talk more about that. Ladies and gentlemen, BBG, Sean McCluskey sitting in for Christy Simone. We're talking about lead guitar. You can learn more, visit leadguitar.org. Stick around. You won't want to miss it. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Wake Up Tucson, ladies and gentlemen. BBG, Ben Buehler-Garcia, Sean McCluskey.
I'm back.
We've moderated our tone. And by the way, this is not an American Warrior radio playlist, but it's even more special because we're honored to have the gentleman who's actually performing that in the studio, Freddie. Well done.
Thank you.
You got some chops, buddy.
Thanks.
Is that why they gave you a cool shirt?
Yeah, exactly.
That's beautiful stuff. That's one. Do you... Now it's me.
No, you got it, yeah.
Yeah, somebody got to fumigate the studio.
Spreading fast.
Are there opportunities for us to go somewhere and see your students perform, or is that only if that school is having their winter concert or something like that? Is there...
Yeah. We, you know, of course, at the end of the, you know, either winter or, you know, spring, so, you know, they have their own recital. But what one of my main jobs is also to kind of help organize a annual showcase concert where we have typically Pima Community College to host, and then where that's where we invite all of our mm-hmm. partner schools to kind of bring in their students and showcase their talent to, you know, friends and family.
Brad, you've been around. I mean, you founded the organization and 2007. I don't do math in public, but that's been a few minutes ago. Are you at a point, have you seen any of your students now rise up and maybe get a scholarship to a university somewhere, or maybe are even performing now as an individual musician or with a symphony or something like that? Do you keep in touch? Do you track them like that? Or
not formally, but we keep in touch, and there's been several examples of that. You know, our goal is to give kids the kind of music experience both of you had, that, you know, it keeps you in school, it keeps you connected, it gives you a tribe of people that you can trust and count on. But if we've got time for a quick example, maybe my favorite is Christian Gomez, a student in Colorado who... when we met him, he was having trouble in school and assumed to be illiterate in Spanish and English because he was profoundly hearing impaired and nobody knew it. And so we discovered it in guitar class. The school helped us get him hearing aids, and he turned into maybe the most talented student we've ever had. He got a degree in music education from Colorado Mountain College, and he performs up and down the Roaring Fork Valley and is a music teacher. And so he's one of my favorite examples. And we've got a bunch of those.
And I just want to emphasize for our listeners out there, again, you can learn more, visit leadguitar.org. You or maybe gentlemen are too shy to bring this up, so Sean and I will, because we're businessmen.
Well, just how do you keep the doors open?
Yeah.
Donations. Okay. Grants and donations, and donations especially.
The radio viewers can't see this, but we have the annual report in front of us. That's why I knew that there was a ton of staff members, because I was going through it and I was flipping through, and there's like four or five pages of staff members, and these are people that are dedicated a lot of their time and lives to this. So mm-hmm. As Ben said, the donation envelope in the back of it did scar us a little bit, because it looks just like a campaign envelope. And
gotta get those $5 checks.
Yeah, don't ask me for a $5 check, but if somebody wanted to give you guys $1,000 or what, how do they do it?
Well, you can go right to leadguitar.org. There's a clear donate page, and it's all easy from there. But you can do a credit card online. You can send a check. You can do a bank transfer, for those really big ones.
If somebody has an old guitar they're not using, would you guys like it?
Absolutely, yeah. We would.
And I want to emphasize that part of the reason this is important is not only to expand the reach of these messages, and literally you heard a story here about the young man Gomez in Colorado where this was a life-changing thing for him, but all the students that come into your program, it is 100% free of charge to them.
Yes. Always.
I mean, that's huge.
And to the schools.
Okay.
Yeah, so all of our services are always free.
Like my daughter, she's around a middle school, and she's the first or second best violin player. But they only have one or two music. I think they have a choir teacher, music teacher, and then music does orchestra as well. So it's not something that's fully funded ever, but they're not in a low-income school. So it's your program's missing out, I guess, a little bit of some of the community, because there's some kids there that aren't being exposed to what you guys do.
Yeah, and it's difficult to reach everybody because there are a bunch of other reasons why we provide free programs. Geography can be a reason. Before we signed on, we were talking about the programs we used to have up and down Highway 60. None of those schools, you know, had 80% or more of students qualifying for free or reduced lunch. We talked about Superior, mm-hmm. Globe, Miami. We've got programs or have had programs in all of those cities. So, you know, if they're isolated by geography, if they don't have a lot of artists or music teachers just coming into town, happy to Page, Arizona is another one. Also, you know, below 80% fertile,
sure.
But we're there because it's an isolated community and they don't have a lot of music happening. So it's more about the lack of opportunity, you know, and we use the 80% free and reduced lunch because there's a strong correlation between that and a lack of music classes. Sure.
So our Wakeys are very responsive and very supportive and action-oriented crowd, other than making donations, which is, I don't want to mitigate the importance of that, folks. You know, this is you've heard this is a tremendous program. We need you to support it. Visit leadguitar.org. What else can we do? Is it maybe if someone's involved in a school district where they say, "Hey, this might be a place you guys want to take a look." Are you open to receiving that kind of feedback? And I mean, folks aren't just listening in Tucson. The signal reaches Sierra Vista. We go up to Casa Grande, and then of course, you know, I mean, just the podcast. Who knows where in the country somebody might be listening. So you're open to that kind of...
That's always very welcome.
Okay.
Volunteers are welcome. And, you know, another thing we wanted to put out there is we've just had a fabulous office space donated to mm-hmm. us by the David and Laura Lovell Foundation. And for the first time, we've got a room big enough to teach classes in that we own. And we're starting an adaptive program in our office. And the idea is we want to reach community members who need that service. But don't go to a school where we've got the program going. So it'll be after school, and if folks want to give us a call, we're going to start September 1st, but if folks want to reach out to us and let us know that they have a child that they think could use that service, and it's a, you know, there are a lot of children that could be helped by it. You know, anyone on the autism spectrum is a really good fit for the class. And folks that have motor neuron differences, difficulty, anything that would cause someone to have difficulty playing guitar in the standard way. That's a class for them.
I tell you, Tucson's the world's largest small town, and collaboration is so important. Are you working with other nonprofits, you know, the Y or other folks like that, that could also help spread the gospel and maybe bring in potential students?
Absolutely. Our first collaborators are all the Tucson school districts. So we collaborate closely with AMFI, Flowing Wells, Sunnyside, TUSD. And we don't by any means reach all of the schools that need our services in those districts.
The one organization that you guys should hook up with is Youth on Their Own.
I love Youth on Their Own.
So, because there's got to be some talented kids there that aren't in schools that could use some, well, this would give them a direction and some hope.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most important foundations in the city, and that's I'm a big believer in Youth on Their Own, and I've never spoken about it with them, but that is a collaboration I've thought about a few times, and would love to do.
Outstanding. Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Like I said, Lead Guitar, they're started here in Tucson. If you're looking to donate, looking for something to do, if you play the guitar and you want to teach, contact them. I'm sure they're always looking for more teachers. They're definitely looking for donations. They need to fill their new building.
And I got to tell you, again, given my experience with music and the impact it had on my life, if you volunteer and you've got the chops, you will infinitely get more out of going down there and helping these young people than you'll ever invest in it. So definitely give it a try. Gentlemen, thanks so much for coming and sharing your story. Whitney, thanks for keeping them between the lines here. They've got their security here, folks, keeping us. Once again, it's leadguitar.org. What can you share with us, maybe debut it here on Wake Up Tucson? Are you this close to a new market somewhere? And
we're dipping our toes in Pittsburgh and Dallas starting next year.
Yeah, I can see the parallels between Pittsburgh and Dallas.
Are you a football fan?
No, but they both have a vowel in their name.
At least two.
Yeah, excellent. Well, again, gentlemen, thank you so much for what you're doing, folks. I encourage you to visit leadguitar.org. Just a hugely impactful program. And by the way, you know, they're producing some good music. Gentlemen, thanks very much, and come back and see us sometime.
Thank you so much for having us. That was a lot of fun.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Ben Bueller Garcia, Sean McCluskey, who's engrossed in their annual report here. We'll be back after this break.
I got a text from Hoffine, and he wants their information. He's got a couple guitars for him.
Oh, awesome. Outstanding. There you go. Win-win. Matt, thanks very much. We'll be right back, folks.
All righty, we're back. We're live. It's Wake Up Tucson. You've got Sean McCluskey, and, well, BBG used to be here. He left me. Oh, there he, oh, he's not back yet. It's all good.
He's tuning up his guitar.
Yeah, he's out there practicing the trumpet, I think. He's getting some lessons real fast. Anyhow, don't forget Lee Guitar. We just had them on. If you'd like to donate, go ahead and give them a quick call or follow up on online. And if you've got a guitar you want to donate, you can also do that. But if you'd like to get on the conversation, give us a quick call, 520-790-2040. Got a couple of things that I'd like to talk about, and one of them is the uselessness of our city council members. They don't get paid enough, apparently, if you're not familiar with that. They've got a raise coming, and the raise should get one of them off their butt, but he just tends not to want to work. So, oh, BBG's back in studio. We found him. Were you practicing your guitar?
No, my trumpet. They encouraged me to bust it out of its case and start playing the basement. I think I'm going to do that.
I think you need to consult with the wife first.
And the cats.
Yes. Hey, who is the Ward 3 city council member?
Currently?
Yes.
Kevin Dahl.
Ah, and CJ is his chief of staff, right?
Yes. I don't know if that's his title, but he's on the staff.
Yeah, I think he's their chief of staff. I mean, they're, when does the pay raise go into effect?
It's in effect now, as far as I know.
They're getting the $92,000 or whatever a year?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, then maybe Kevin...
I think it went into effect in January.
Maybe Kevin Dahl's actually doing work now. Because when we met Kevin, when we met Kevin Dahl in August, this is a great story. Met Kevin and CJ in August with my client. My client's from Portland. They used to live there. They loved it. Portland got a little too rough for them, and they took their liberalism and they left and they came here to Tucson. Great transition. I mean, if you're going to go from Portland to Portland Junior, it's a good move. And they're liberal as all get out, but they love me because I run my company in a conservative fashion and I take care of their assets. They really appreciate the council member because they voted for him, but he literally, Kevin told us in August, well, we had a problem with one of the properties behind ours, and the property behind him had a pile of debris.
Mm-hmm.
That pile of debris is still there. We'll get to that in a second, but hold on. I'll tell the people I can't talk right now, doing some radio. Kevin in August said, oh, well, wait till my chief of staff gets here because I don't get paid enough to handle these things for you.
Wow.
Quote unquote.
I'd wish you'd had a body cam right
and then. And then CJ comes over, and I didn't know CJ. I thought CJ was the homeless guy walking down the street because he doesn't look all that professional. He's wearing a dirty T-shirt, hasn't shaved in about 17 weeks, and he's got disheveled hair and wearing shorts. I wear shorts all the time, but at least mine are like, you know, somewhat professional, if you can have professional shorts. Nevertheless, in August, we talked about this, and they said, oh, we'll send a notice to the people, and they'll clean it up, and they'll take care of it. Apparently, Kevin Dahl, his $28,000 or whatever he made last year, wasn't enough for him to do anything because the pile's still there. Sent a notice to the office, Ward office yesterday. Actually, my client did. He was just upset. He's like, I voted for you. I support you. But you need to support me because we're the dollars and cents of the community, and what you guys are doing here isn't helping. And he's really giving him the business, which is nice. But he's doing it politely.
And, you know, even outside of the fact that that's his job, I mean, supporting them or not, but that's their job.
Yeah. So
that's their job.
He says, hey, I'm trying to get these two, we got two properties of his that aren't rented and they're in the university area. And he's like, I'm trying to get these rented, but you guys aren't helping me. You're not helping the community. Have you driven the area? Have you even gone like three blocks from your office and looked around? Of course, the answer is no, crickets. They didn't do anything. I went yesterday. I took pictures, sent them five pictures of the area. The trash and the weeds and the just disheveled mess that we live in. You want to know why kids don't want to live in the university area, why they go to the high-rise dorms? Because our city council, our elected officials, don't give a damn about our community.
You know, in my first campaign in 2009, we actually had an initiative we called the Pride Pack, and we went out there because I do, you know, my expertise is in community development.
We talked about broken window theory.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I go to these other, and that makes a difference.
You clean your washes.
Absolutely.
Your neighbors then clean their yards. If you don't clean your yard, your neighbor won't clean their yard.
We had volunteers that were going out and cleaning up graffiti during the campaign. It was just a little something to do. And that's, I mean, that's basic blocking and tackling. And you know what? To make it worse, you and I and maybe every other property owner in Tucson, I don't know if it's every quarter or twice a year, we get that little nastygram from the city of Tucson saying, hey, clean up your alleyway. And you go out there, and you, at least in my alleyway, I go out there and look around and say, what's the problem? I mean, the trash truck can get through. There's nothing hanging out.
Your weeds are over 4.5 inches tall, and they're on the that's their issues. That's literally their issue. But then you look at the palm trees for the city of Tucson. You look at the curb strips for the city of Tucson. Those are all just getting run amok, and they don't care about those, but they care about the alleyway. I mean, priorities.
It's kind of funny, but it's kind of not, because I consider Steve Kozacik a friend, but we had a meeting. There was a meeting held there at Ward 6 recently, long after Steve had resigned. And my first thing when I pulled up and I parked, I'm looking at the medians and the landscaping around Ward 6.
Look at Ward 3 office.
It was awful. Worse than Ward 3. And I mean, weeds and stuff like this, and the cracked sidewalk. And as I'm walking in for our community meeting, there's a woman storming out. And I found out later she was there to complain about all the weeds and stuff around a city facility that they weren't taking care of while they're, sending
us. You said there was a cracked sidewalk?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I'm about to go to war with the city of Tucson and code enforcement, community development, permitting, and everybody because of the simple fact that they have some stupid things. Like, we had Tom here earlier where we could talk about permitting and that sort of thing and development. Code enforcement comes out. We have 503 East University. The house has been there for 100 years, right? The sidewalks have been there for 60 years.
Yeah.
Well, one of the trees has got a little root going underneath it. It's only like I got a quarter inch crack, maybe a half inch rise on it. City's having a conniption over it. I got to rip out the sidewalk, take out the roots, and replace the sidewalks. But yet a council member's office has got a cracked sidewalk and they're not doing anything about it.
Oh.
You know why? Because it's the council member's office responsibility to take care of it. So it's going to come out of their funding. Because as the homeowner, I have to fix the sidewalk. I didn't put the sidewalk there.
You just made me think of something. Folks may not know this, but Plan Tucson, we're in the process of updating the general plan for the city of Tucson right now. And there's all kinds of community forums going on and whatnot. And, it's just kind of thing, Sean, where you, again, in my line of work, you start to see the usual suspects at all these community meetings. They might be a neighborhood activist or representing the bike community or whatever it is. And that's fine. I mean, community engagement is important. We all need to get involved in that. But Plan Tucson, the general plan is supposed to be a 30,000-foot level aspirational document that just provides general guidance of what we want our community to look at. And the reason I'm engaged on behalf of my client is we're plan defense. When you get asked just any person off the street to put up 15 post-its about what they want Tucson to look like, you get things like, okay, Tucson needs to be pollution free. We need net zero building ordinances. All this stuff. And
go back to your 30,000 foot level view.
Right.
From the 30,000 foot level view, I can see the Jefferson Park street signs are non-existent. They're completely whitewashed. From that 30,000 foot view, I can see the potholes and the disarray of the roads. Let's start there.
Well, and that's my concern is, we all want a good community. We wouldn't live here otherwise, and I encourage people to get engaged. But I don't know, like I said, I'm just worried. So we've got all these sub-plans. We've got the resilient Tucson. We've got complete streets. We've got P-Chip. We've
complete
got the
streets
Hess
where?
Plan.
Show me one.
That's a whole nother show, Sean. But, as we're working on this general plan, my job down there lately is to keep reminding staff, this is an aspirational document. It should be general. There should be no actual action parts in this. The general plan should not refer to a subplan because all of us get to vote on the general plan and approve it or not. That will be coming up in next year. But we don't get an input on these subplans. And someone somewhere just by the stroke of a pen could require that all poodles in Tucson have to be pink. And then when I go down there for rezoning, they say, okay, you're not in compliance with the general plan. John talked about all these costs that are involved in trying to get something out of the ground. You're not in compliance with the general plan because all your poodles aren't going to be pink. Well, that was in none of the paperwork. And I just, again, pollution free. Okay, I'm a conservationist. I do rainwater harvesting. I do gray water at my house. I believe in you take care of the land because the land takes care of you. But pollution free, I mean, the only way for us to be pollution-free is if every Tucsonan lives under a mesquite bush. It's not achievable.
Not at all.
And I think it's malfeasance to put stuff like that in a general plan.
At that point, you're going to get rid of all packaging, all cars, all not everything that's non-biodegradable.
So my take on climate change is I think it is going to kill us, but it's going to kill us. Al Gore and Greta, what's her name, and you know, the president is going to kill us for a different reason. There's a perfect example I want to share with you when we come back after the break about what's going on with the building codes. But they're just going to net zero on a single family residential home is achievable, kind of, if money's no object.
Well,
and that's my fear, is the folks leading this charge, they don't consider money doesn't come into the equation at all. And it's going to, I mean, we're all going to be living under a mesquite bush pretty soon.
They need to understand the affordability of a home right now is like $89,000 a year annual income. Otherwise, you can't afford it.
Well, you can if you...
We don't have that median income job.
Plus, you get a free car.
Free gas, too.
There you go.
Yeah. It saves you $11,000 a year on your free food and gas.
I think they're all EVs, aren't they?
Well, now you're paying for electric. How net zero is that?
The city's paying for electric.
But how? It's not net zero.
Okay, here we go.
We're going to derail real quick.
We're wrapping around the axle. Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Bueller Garcia, Sean McCluskey here on Wake Up Tucson. We've got one more segment left for you. Give us a call, 790-2040. Ooh, here's some inspirational music. Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Christy Simone, for the American Warrior Radio playlist. I might have to get on the ball and submit one, another one. Is there a limit, Matt, on how many playlists? Are you limited to one a year, or what's the opportunity here?
I think Chris is going to be doing them as long as he receives them.
Okay, so there you go, folks. If you're a wakey out there and you want your playlist.
Yes, send your 18 songs to wakeuptucson at gmail.com.
Outstanding. Ben Bueller Garcia, Sean McCluskey. It's always a privilege to do radio, Sean.
It's always fun, too.
Yeah, we learned some stuff. You made a great connect for one of our guests here with Youth on Their Own. Good stuff.
You were sitting in front of me, so I got the idea from you.
Because I'm young?
Oh, no. We're okay. Not going there. You're only at heart. But no, it's one of your favorite charities and one of your favorite places to support.
Nothing but love. So we're talking about one of the other subject matters this morning is how we actually achieve housing affordability. And I was sharing with Sean, as part of my day job, we are updating all the building codes as well, which are basically the design rules and other stuff you have to follow to build in Tucson. You may not be aware of this, but the EPA has passed a new rule that beginning on January 1st, 2025, all air conditioning HVAC units have to use a new type of refrigerant, which is better for the environment and slightly, and I emphasize slightly, more hazardous than what we're doing now. There is a proposed chapter in the Mechanical Building Code that would require if that refrigerant line penetrates more than one floor, so anything over two stories, that new line now has to be housed in a fire-rated ventilated shaft, which is not inexpensive. Now, you may think, okay, for new construction, not a problem, I'll just design that, but here's the wrinkle. After January 1st, you will not be able to get the old refrigerant. So let's say your AC unit on your three-story apartment complex blows up on January 2nd. You have to put in a new unit with a new AC, and then you would have to retrofit that building to comply with this building code. And literally, I'm sitting in the meeting, and one of the mechanical engineers on the commission says, you know, this could... So, I mean, think about City Hall, 10 stories, right? They have to change out their HVAC, and the cost... His point, and this might be a little over the top, but his point is, this potentially could make every building over three stories in Tucson obsolete. And we don't, right now, you don't even have to put compressed natural gas... your gas line in a fire-rated ventilated shaft. You just run the pipe through. And how is that? And that's infinitely, I mean, there's only a limited amount of refrigerant in an HVAC. So unless you go down there and put your mouth on the tube and start sucking.
There's gallons in it. I mean, there's...
Yeah, but gallons compared to an unlimited supply coming in of natural gas.
Sure, no, I mean, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely
you'd
right.
Think that'd be a much bigger, and I don't want to give anybody ideas about what we're going to have to do, but it's stuff like that that compounds the problem and adds to the cost of building. And, you know, we talk about, it's this stuff that all adds up. It's a death by a thousand cuts. And eventually all of us are going to have to be living under a creosote bush because we can't afford to build anymore.
Well, it's also like that they use the new refrigerators come out and they have propane in them as their coolant. And there's been a couple, well, the one lady in like middle of nowhere, Missouri too. Little old lady. She's in the bedroom. Sipping on her cup of tea, reading her book, and all of a sudden the front of her door of refrigerator blows off because it had a problem on the inside with the propane.
Wow.
Thankfully, she wasn't in the kitchen. They got her a new fridge. They fixed her kitchen. But, I mean, come on. That's what you're putting in your house right now.
So it wasn't so good for her personal environment.
Yeah, no. It wasn't good for her environment at all. I mean, it got destroyed and flame retarded.
It's like this other stuff that's slightly better for the environment, but for the people handling it, it's not so good for their nearby environment.
Technically flammable. I mean, that's a problem.
Well, yeah, but the way it's been described to me, it's flammable kind of like jet fuel is flammable. I mean, you can throw a lighted match in a can of jet fuel. It's despite what you saw in the second Die Hard movie, it's not going to cook off. That match is going to go out.
Liquid fuel is our friend, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
It's when it vaporizes. It's when it's vapor. That's when.
No, the vapor gets you. It's the vapor that gets you.
That's when it's really bad.
I'll share this again. I mean, you can take my gas stove when you pry the spatula from my cold, dead hands. I'm not giving mine up. In fact, now I'm almost tempted to go out and buy a bunch of appliances and just put them in the garage now so I don't have to deal with this, but that may not be in the budget this year.
Or you could sell them for a heck of a profit later, you know.
That's true. That's a very good point.
Like the black market shower heads on Seinfeld.
Like I should have invested in 7.62 caliber ammunition. That's got a better return. No, it's got a better return than gold right now.
Maybe, I don't know. 9mm, 40 cal, 22 long rifle. No?
853 20, Matt. Mark, this is the point where we officially went off the rails.
Okay.
Well, it keeps going on sale, too.
And 605.5, I think there was another one. But
yeah, we went off the rails right when we started. What are you talking about?
It's a good thing.
That's why they love
even
you.
Ozzie.
And you left me in here Ozzie by myself.
Ozzie said we're going off the rails.
He did say a little more love, a little less hate.
Yeah.
And we went to
less hate.
Hamas at the U of A.
That'll be interesting to see. I will confess, I'll be curious to see how this develops around the country and what this is. Because I firmly believe that this is not random.
Oh, come on. You said this earlier, too, and I meant to make this point, and I'm glad and sorry to cut you off, but everybody's got the same damn green tent. Okay? Now, I can't go to Lowe's and order 5 refrigerators because I only carry 3. Where did you get 60 green tents?
I saw a funny cartoon this morning where it was a couple in a sporting goods store, and they're looking. There's 2 green and white tents, and the guy's asking the salesman, he's like, do you have any tents that are not politically motivated? Paint the A, keep the A white. We do have a last minute caller, Charles. Charles got it. And we know he's never short of an opinion.
He's got a lot of ammo, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm, as Emil used to say, I'm always unavoidable for comment. You know, the problem is those are all the present tense. What they want is the past tense. I just recently purchased a gas stove, and I'm getting rid of my electric. And I also made it LP, so I'm not dependent on a gas line. And as long as LP is still available, which I hope it always will be, I'm in good stead. And I would encourage other people to do that. Figure out exactly what the Greens want and do the opposite. Furthermore, I wonder how long it's going to be until they pass a red flag law on gas stoves.
Well, the attack's already taken place in New York City, so, you know, I mean, it's coming. About the anti-smoking thing. It started in California, it started in New York, and then it met in the middle.
Didn't they just do something in New York now where you've got to put some kind of sophisticated, expensive ventilation system if you do coal-fire pizzas? How many people is that going to put out of business?
Well, they're making the pizzas like $87.50 a pie now.
Dang. I got a question for you. Does anybody have a model building code that would be perfect for freedom as opposed to environmentally restrictive, i.e., does the Competitive Enterprise Institute have a model building code? Goldwater has been so successful in modeling legislation that it then shops to various legislatures around the country and then starts to create a groundswell for things that sometimes go all the way to the national level, like the National Right to Try Act for people who have terminal illness and are able to use experimental medicines that are at least through the first stage of experimentation, but they're not approved yet by the FDA, they can still use them as an experiment. There's all kinds of models like that out there. Is anybody doing that with building codes?
Charles, not that I'm aware of, but I will tell you the flip side of that coin is Tucson is now just starting on developing a resilient building code for the Southwest. And again, that's something we're keeping an eye on because, net zero and all this stuff is achievable. if money is no object. And my caution and fear is, as you're out there and you've got a family and you're trying to buy something, if it costs more to build it, it's going to come out of your pocketbook. And we don't have time, but I just read an article about the electric vehicle situation. I mean, if you compile everything, that subsidy is almost $15,000 per car.
Cost of a new battery.
It's way more than that.
And we're paying that. Yeah, that's not Uncle Joe paying that. We're paying that. And
I just did a whole show on that.
Yeah, and people who are driving, you know, regular gas cars, now we're subsidizing folks with EVs, and I just don't know where the equity is in that.
Well, and the EVs
now,
don't...
Lastly,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. Lastly, as a solution, let's recycle the city council and outsource it to Lahore, Pakistan. They got to do it for a lot less.
And better.
And you can always hang up on them when they try and scam you.
Hey, Charles, would you like to be the District 9 constable?
No.
Okay.
I respectfully do not want to work in government. Government has the fecal touch. Anything it touches turns to that substance, and I am not interested in being the fecal substance arm of government. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I love
hey,
it.
Charles, thanks
good
for
answer
your call. Sean, it's been a pleasure as always.
It flew by.
Sitting in on working 5 to 5. Actually, for me today, it's going to be like 5 to 8.
Yeah, I got up at 4. What time are you talking about 5? How'd you get here? I woke up at 5.
I woke up at 4, but I had to do my show prep.
See, I just let you do that.
Such as it was.
Yeah, it was easy. Who's showing up today? We're done.
Hey, Matt, you did a good job. Thanks for keeping us between the lines. And folks can find this podcast how soon, Matt, generally?
Real soon. Like, give me about 15 minutes and I'll have it up
there. Go to KVOY.com.
Who's up next on Jump In?
Tom Moulton. He's going to be, it's a replay, but it was a good one. He's going to be talking with Scott Marchand from the Pima Air Museum. They just had some big news this week. They're getting a Martin Mars aircraft. It's a flying boat. It's second only in size only to the, it actually went into production and deployed, but it's second in size only to the Spruce Goose, the H-2 Hercules.
Wow. Very cool. Congratulations
to
them.
Something to do this summer.
So and by the way, later this year, the summer, I think they expand and they have nighttime hours out there, so you can go out and get out of the heat. And
we forgot the Wildlife Museum. Good thing to do summer nights.
Amen.
The Sonora Desert Museum?
Yes.
Okay. If they don't have a rabid fox out there, check the news, folks.
They're working on that.
There you go.
Okay. Take care.